Ahoy, listener. My name is Ian Willoughby, and this is episode 29 of the Prague Talk podcast from Radio Prague International. This time, our guest is the YouTuber Bald and Bankrupt. The Englishman, whose real name is Ben, has become huge on YouTube with nearly 2.2 million subscribers since he started posting videos of his travels through the countries of the former USSR. Bald and Bankrupt is now resident here in Prague and discusses his fascination with all things Soviet, his COVID-19 experience, the situation in Belarus, and his love of the Czech capital with my colleague Tom McEncrow. So enjoy their chat now in this edition of Prague Talk.
Okay, so with me in the studio today is the British YouTuber Bald and Bankrupt, who specializes in making travel videos from some of the least well-known travel destinations across the world. He's also an enthusiast for anything Soviet and the former Eastern Bloc. Hello, Ben, or should I say Mr. Bald?
You can choose either. I mean, outside of filming, I prefer Ben, I think, would be more appropriate.
Before we get to travel, which is obviously what I mainly want to ask you about, my first question has to be, why did you choose Bald and Bankrupt? What is the story behind that name?
Well, the story is very simple. I mean, I think everyone has a fear of being online and what they're going to attack you with. And so I thought, take away what they can attack me with. So the first thing was the baldness, obviously. So like, own it, so to speak. And the bankrupt, I was made bankrupt. My business failed. I was made bankrupt just before I started the channel, which is kind of why I started the channel, to get myself out of bankruptcy. So Bald, Bankrupt, let's go with that. It's got a ring to it.
I also wanted to get one thing clear. There are lots of speculation in the comment section, at least, under your videos.
You're scary.
Whether you're a former intelligence officer. Many people say that because you're so good at communicating and getting through difficult situations. Is there any truth there?
Well, I can't answer that. I can't answer the military background stuff, obviously.
Okay, fine. Okay, yeah. We'll leave that open.
I tell you why, because these are questions, when you apply for a visa for Russia especially, they ask you, like, do you have any military background or anything? So. Okay. Saying anything would be very foolish.
Okay. Now, most of your content centers around traveling to Eastern European states and the former USSR, or at least the Eastern Bloc. You've obviously made videos about India, Mauritania, Cuba, etc. But mainly, I find that about these countries. And you often spend a lot of time picking out sort of rundown, little-known Soviet locations, whether they're bunkers, restaurants, hotels. Why did you choose this focus?
Well, the Soviet Union, because I became fascinated with the Soviet Union when I was roughly 15 years old. The wall was coming down, perestroika, all that kind of stuff. And it was always my dream to travel across the former Soviet Union. But I never had the opportunity. And so when this YouTube came along and I thought there was a way to do it, I decided, well, that's what I really want to do with my life. So maybe I can take people along with me, because the other part of it, the answer to that question, is I believe that the people of Eastern Europe have been kind of, how would you put it? I think they've been the victims of some negative propaganda, not just their governments, but also their people. And I knew from being married to a Belarusian woman, having Belarusian in-laws, that that wasn't the whole story, that, okay, you have to separate the governments from the people. And so I wanted to shine a light really on those areas and show people what the people were like.
Could you sort of enlighten me on what you exactly mean with that propaganda?
Let's take Russians, for example. You know, the newspapers, Russians are portrayed as kind of aggressive drunks, alcoholics, you know, don't go to Russia, you get your head kicked in, you know, if you're even slightly effeminate or something like that. And I know that's not true. That's not the case at all. I know that Russians are extremely warm, extremely outgoing, hospitable people. And so I wanted to kind of readdress that balance, you know, in my minuscule way.
You're sort of saying, you know, that many of these people are very hospitable, etc. But you have also travelled to some very dangerous countries, at least officially. At least, you know, many of your fans, I myself, who sometimes watch your videos, are very seriously concerned about your safety when we watch some of these
Which
videos.
Which places in particular?
Well, personally, Mauritania I found was quite scary. I was wondering, where were you most afraid? Which country?
Okay, well, the area, the place, I mean, it's such a simple answer. The place I was most afraid, I never filmed there, but was America. I mean, downtown Atlanta, downtown Nashville is the scariest place, you know, I've ever been to. There's police everywhere with shotguns. And I mean, it felt like you're in some kind of military, like, lockdown. Everywhere else I've been, I've never felt in danger. And whether that be Chechnya or Mauritania, I've never felt physically in danger. I felt in some uncomfortable situations where people maybe, you know, are reacting to me, not not quite in a way that I would like or that my social skills can get me kind of out of. But America for me is without a doubt the scariest. I think Western Europe is much scarier than Eastern Europe, let's put it that way.
Will there be any bald and bankrupt videos from America?
I don't know, maybe one day, not so far.
But actually, my next question, because I didn't expect you'd answer this way, was going to be whether you have any sort of strategy to use when you're feeling there could be danger or there's sort of strangers who you're not sure about, how you get out of those situations?
Well, I don't think I've ever been in, I have a very good filter for people. So I can kind of feel when something's a little bit off or someone's a little bit off. So I can kind of extrapolate myself. I get myself out of that situation rather before it starts. But I think just a smile and being honest and genuine and offering a handshake kind of like puts people at ease, disarms them.
You're not just a travel YouTuber. You've sort of got a deeper side. It's quite informative, your content as well. And, you, for example, explore war memorials, the legacies of ethnic tensions. You get invited into refugee flats and interview them. Is that something that comes naturally while you're recording, or are you consciously trying to educate people about lesser parts of that history? I mean, you mentioned, stuff about Eastern Europe.
I'm just genuinely fascinated by everything that happened under this grand experiment called the Soviet Union. And that means just the way people live, the simple things like that, what they eat, what they drink, but also the deeper topics like that, and especially with the breakdown of the Soviet Union, what happened to the people after that, so hence the refugees. Yeah, and the Second World War, of course. I wanted to bring that in particular to light because I think many people in England in particular, or America, let's say, think that it was all about us in the West that won it. And they forget that the huge sacrifices that were made on the Eastern Front by the Soviets. So I did, I think that's a deliberate ploy of mine to bring that to light.
If I sort of stay with crazy stories, I mean, for example, you were invited by an Azerbaijani refugee family to have dinner with them after you just ran into their apartment block, or by a Mauritanian family when you were waiting for a freight train to take you. And there have been people commenting, but also it sort of seems obvious that it's a sort of visual proof of the saying that the poorest are often those who give the most. Are there any sort of other timeless truths that you've learned during your travels about people?
Oh, just that. I mean, without sounding too cliched, the old classic, we're all the same. I mean, but really, it doesn't matter where you go. We all laugh at pretty much the same thing. And yeah, you'll find hospitality really wherever you go. Like you said, the poorest give the most. I think that's true. But I just don't feel with wealthier people. I don't doubt if I met wealthy people, they'd say, come back and have some dinner with us. But those just aren't. I'm not hanging out in expensive bars, restaurants, etc.
Well, except that very expensive hotel in Azerbaijan, which we ran into.
Oh, wow, you have done your research on as well. Well done.
Now, there's also another thing I want to ask, which is you're often forbidden to film by local police or people on the street.
Yes.
I was wondering, is there any sort of crazy experience that you've had in your travels which you did not manage to capture on film?
Oh, there's loads of stuff that I regret not capturing either because I just wasn't quick enough on the draw, or and it's kind of over before you realise. Or yes, people often just say no filming, and it makes no sense often because it'll be something so mundane. It'll be a building and it's like, no, you can't film here, you can't film. It's like, why not? It's just a building or a statue. I think there's this hangover, especially in former Soviet states, of this, everything's forbidden unless I have like permission to do it. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. But no, I can't think of any major things that I missed. I mean, the luckiest one was, I don't know if you ever saw it, but I was in Ingushetia in the Caucasus, where there were suddenly some guys on top of a car firing machine guns and shooting guns and stuff. It was a very short video, but I just heard the gunfire and just happened to be rolling at the time. I was doing something else when the gunfire went off, and then the video went from there. I often think there's a YouTube god. And that YouTube god has been smiling on me, because sometimes I think to myself, how did I manage to capture that? Like, how did I meet that chap? Like, I went out with no preparation. I met this chap, invited me back to his house and like offered me vodka. And, we had this deep conversation about the war or whatever. And it's like, how did that happen? I sometimes do genuinely think there's some kind of god up there that wants me to capture this stuff on film and to enlighten people slightly.
How much research do you do?
Zero.
Zero. Zero. Really?
I decide in a country, I get a feeling like, okay, I'm ready to film. I feel like filming. And I think that country could be interesting. Maybe there's something there I want to see in particular or just in general. And I go. And, before I go, I'll read something about it. But I have no plans when I get there, apart from let's land and let's just see, which is quite nerve-wracking because I never know. There's lots of films that I threw away. There's lots of films that didn't make the cut just because nothing really happened. I didn't meet someone, I'm not doing top five beaches of Thailand, which you can guarantee to make.
I wanted to ask you one more question on that topic, which is the camera itself. Does that help or does it hinder you? I sort of get a feeling that people are made quite uncomfortable by cameras. Do you have that experience? Or?
Yes, all the time. I mean, that's the most nerve-wracking thing, is trying to talk to people. I mean, my channel is really not about me. It's about the people I meet. And I'm nervous because it's strange for someone to come up to you suddenly with a camera. They've never met you before. And suddenly you're filming them and you're asking them questions. Like, I'd be like, well, what are you doing?
I'm surprised how often the people actually seem to be quite okay with it.
There are certain techniques that you use and that you learn. So one, I don't know how you'd call it. But I always start off by saying, like, they'll notice the camera and I say, hi, I'm just filming your country, showing the world what nice people you have here. And then it kind of puts them in a situation, I feel, that they kind of got to be nice and respond. You know, they don't want to be the one person who doesn't allow me to film. So it's kind of techniques that you pick up as you go along just to, I don't know what the word is, maybe ingratiate yourself slightly to people.
I wanted to move to the Czech Republic itself.
Yeah.
If you had to sort of characterise Czechs, you know, where do they fit in all the people from the former Eastern Bloc that you've met, you know?
Yep. The Czech people for me are by far the politest people that you could possibly meet. And as an Englishman who values politeness so highly, it's a real pleasure being here. But I wouldn't say that they're the warmest people. I've been here many, many times and for long stints, and I don't really have any like deep connections with a Czech person, unfortunately. I sometimes feel also like when I go to a bar and it's just Czech people outside of the tourist centre, of course. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I kind of had that feeling that I'm kind of like, I don't know, a little bit like, what's this guy doing here? Why is he in our bar? Why isn't he down by Charles Bridge or something? But extremely polite. I love the fact that when you walk into a shop, people say, they say good day, and when you leave, they always say goodbye. All my neighbours, you know, they don't know me, but they always say good day and goodbye when we pass on the stairwell. Very polite people.
Well, there is a saying, which is that English people are like, I believe, a peach. They're soft on the outside and hard on the inside.
Right.
But Czech people are like a coconut. They're very hard on the outside, but once you get through...
Is that right? Yes, I just haven't gone through yet. But, one day.
Now, Prague has a reputation for being quite a wild place in the 1990s. More wild than today, definitely. Mm-hmm. Did you visit the city back then?
Oh, I did the backpacker thing around Europe when I was about, what year would it be? I was about 27. So we're going back almost 20 years. And yes, when you say wild, do you mean the nightlife was wild? Or do you mean it was wild in terms of, I don't know, gangsterism? Or what do you mean by wild exactly?
Both.
Okay. Well, the gangsterism I never experienced. But yeah, there was maybe there was a wilder side back then. Yeah, it's a little bit tamer now, I suppose, with mass tourism. It's changed, it's died down a little bit perhaps.
You've done a video about Prague.
Yeah.
Do you plan to do any videos about the Czech Republic?
I don't think I'd, I don't know. But I mean, about Prague, probably not. I spend a lot of time here. And the thing is, whenever you make a video, you always annoy somebody. And so when you want to spend a long time in a place, and I see Prague as home now, you don't really want to be like annoying the locals. So it's so easy just to, you know, make a joke. And I mean, if someone says something about England, I really don't care. You know, it's like, whatever, make your jokes. But I mean, you make a joke about certain countries, I mean, India in particular. But and that's it. You know, they all come out and they're all after you. And so in Czech Republic, I don't know, I just want a nice quiet life here and just do my thing without annoying the locals.
It reminds me of an experience you had in Chechnya, actually, what you were just saying.
Yes.
But yes, I'll leave that.
okay.
But, you know, you did say you want to settle in Prague or sort of stay here for a bit. Why Prague?
I think that Prague is the most livable city. I don't think it's the world's greatest city, but it's the most livable city that I've been to. I mean, when I was young, I used to draw, design cities, pen and paper, or whether it's with Lego or something. And I just think Prague ticks off everything pretty much you could want if you live here in terms of, you know, recreational activities, friendliness to the people, just everything, the layout, the transport, everything just works. It's clean, it's safe. Yeah, I can't really think of any negatives about living in Prague. I haven't discovered them yet anyway.
You did a video where you were touring Belarus and reviewing their beers.
Yes. Oh, wow. Imagine trying that in Czech Republic.
Exactly. I was saying, it's perhaps too cliche, but would you think of doing that?
Well, yeah, there's a lot to choose from. Someone would have to recommend me, like, let's narrow it down to 5 or 6. Otherwise, yeah, I'd be here literally all my lifetime.
Now, you're a travel vlogger in a time when the COVID-19 coronavirus has brought about a halt, or at least a serious limitation to international travel. But you still insist on travelling and making videos and even contracted the virus yourself. Yes. Was it in Serbia, if I'm correct?
Yes, I went to Serbia.
So could you tell me, what was that experience like?
Oh, I mean, it was my own fault for a start, because I wasn't taking it as seriously as I should have done. I was kind of the belief, well, if you're under 60, you're okay, which was stupid of me. And then I contracted it in Serbia and spent 2 weeks, first of all at home, just thinking it will be okay, and it didn't get okay, it got worse, and then 2 weeks in hospital, 1 week on emergency in Serbia, yeah. So it was a scary time, for sure, it was a very scary time.
Indeed, you spent time in a Serbian intensive care unit.
Yes.
With people dying all around you.
Well, I saw two people died, yeah, in the beds next to me, yeah.
If I recall, because you posted a video about that on YouTube, and then it got taken off.
That's right.
And if I recall correctly, on that video you said there were some friends or some sort of people who watch your videos and somehow organised that you got out of Serbia. Did that exactly happen?
Oh, wow. We go really, really delving deep
It's just interesting because I find that a lot of Russians like your content. And it seems that, you know, you get sort of interesting contacts and connections through this, or at least fans. So how did this happen?
Sure. Well, it was... So basically, I was in the hospital. I was on the lower ward and nothing was happening. And a friend had a contact at the Russian embassy and contacted the Russian embassy, someone who worked there, and said, listen, explained the situation and said, this guy's made some videos about Russia. You should check him out. Like, is there something we can do? And that person at the Russian embassy said, sure. And so things started moving after that. Now, I don't want to tie it all in and say it was 100% the Russian embassy, because then people make the comment, oh, well, corruption, you got moved because of contacts. I don't know if it was that, but things started moving after the Russian embassy called a hospital. Coincidence? Maybe.
Well, it's very useful in any case.
I don't think it was Putin himself.
On that note, I did want to ask you, contacts or offers. I want to ask you, you know, like you said, you have an ex-Belarusian wife. Yep. You have a travel companion who is Belarusian.
Yes.
And you wrote, actually, recently that you were contacted, I will cite here, talking about Belarus. The government recently reached out to me to make a film or two that portrayed Belarus and its leadership in a certain light, but I won't betray the people who have been screwed by the kleptocracy by doing that, end quote. Tell me about that. What happened?
Well, I mean, the story is not that interesting, but the thing is, you realise the more you do this profession, that the influence that you kind of had in that government's value or are afraid of you, and they want the videos, because obviously, I mean, it's very cheap publicity for them, you know, and you can have millions of views in a video. So you can really like alter someone's opinion about a country, and you do get people reaching out to you. I've had it from other countries as well. And I just don't like the idea of kind of being guided in any way what to say, what to think, what to do on film. And yeah, Belarus did reach out for me. Someone from the government reached out and dangled the possibility of visiting some, I think it was the KGB museum and some other stuff, if I would make some positive videos about Belarus. But as I say, I would never betray the Belarusian people like that, because they've suffered so much. You know, the people in the villages especially, they're making $100 a month. They're living on subsistence wages, basically. Most people leave for Russia to find just, you know, to have a chance of something, or Prague or somewhere. And to then, like, to hang around with those people, to listen to their stories, to know what's happened under that dictatorship, to then make videos praising the government. I mean, no thank you.
I am going to go a bit here, go off, and because, you know, your quote continues.
Sure.
And you say, Lukashenko, whilst doing some things in the beginning that benefited Belarus, such as stamping out the age of bandit capitalism and bringing law and order to the nation, has now clung to power for too long. But I'm sort of interested in that. How would you posit Belarus, for example, to some other former Soviet countries? Has it sort of somehow managed to preserve that life, or is it exactly the same? Do you know what I mean? Is there something different there?
Belarus, at the end of the fall of the empire in the early 90s, really suffered more than most places, where you could say Belarus, Ukraine, Russia, in terms of bandit capitalism, in terms of the thugs running the streets and just stealing everything. And Lukashenko came on, rode into power in a legitimate election to stamp that out. And someone needed to do that. Otherwise, you'd have a situation like Ukraine under Kuchma, where it just continued for years and years. So they say in Belarus, if Lukashenko had left after, well, let's say in 2000, there'd be statues to him now, because he did something good in the beginning. He stabilised things. People were being paid. The wages were getting paid on time. And so were pensions. Unlike in Ukraine, where people, or even Russia under Yeltsin, where people were waiting months and months and months, and sometimes it never came their wages. So definitely, in the beginning, he did good things, and I think the Belarusian people supported him in the beginning as well. But, you know, he outstayed his welcome, let's say that.
And weren't you worried? You know, I mean, I'm surprised you took a hard stand here, but I know, you know, your connections obviously to Belarus and the fact that you make so many videos in Belarus. Let's not forget the videos where you explore the Chernobyl villages around there. Do you think you'll be able to come back anytime soon?
I would be surprised if I was allowed back in, if I wasn't blacklisted. I've been to the protests here in Prague. They obviously have people watching those. I've been quite vociferous, at least on Instagram, about my beliefs. And so I think it's highly unlikely that I would be allowed back in, which is a shame.
We're coming sort of to the close.
Sure.
You've just been to Albania.
Yes.
Tell us, will you reveal any of the countries you're planning to go to in the future?
Well, OK, so, yeah, Albania was great, by the way. But my plan is to do the full 15 republics of the former Soviet Union. So I'm working my way around. So, I mean, this summer was supposed to, before COVID struck, was supposed to be the summer of Central Asia. Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, etc. So that is my next plan. But when that's going to happen, I don't know. So in the meantime, I'll probably just do some smaller countries in the Eastern Bloc, so to speak, that have opened up. But long term, yes, I need to tick off those republics.
Central European countries, by any chance?
Possibly. We'll see.
Which Central European country would you be most intrigued by?
I'm fascinated by, what was East Germany? So that would be fascinating to go across the border and see what remnants are left. If not there, Romania interests me, the Balkans, but Romania interests me everywhere. You know, honestly, this whole part of the world just fascinates me. What happened, you know, under the Soviets, during the war, post-Soviet times. So, I can't narrow it down really to one. But probably not the Czech Republic, since I like it.
I was going to ask you some sort of big metaphysical question towards the end.
Oh, how terrifying.
But actually, you'll be happy. To finish off this interview, I will just ask you a pressing question of many of your YouTube fans.
Okay.
In India, did you end up giving Mr. 100 rupees his money?
The big question. Wow, the secret. The answer to that is a big, I can reveal. No, I gave him nothing. No, because he's an able-bodied man walking around who can get a job. There's people I'm willing to help out and like to help out, but not a dude that just follows you constantly for hours. So no, Mr. 100 rupees, he's still, he's probably still out. I don't know if he's behind
me. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm surprised you managed to shake him off after that.
Yeah, it took a while. It took a while.
The YouTube star, known as Bald and Bankrupt, was speaking to my colleague, Tom McEncrow. If you're listening to Prague Talk for the first time, there are over 24 other interviews in the series that are also available to listen to. And of course, you can sign up to receive us regularly wherever you get your podcasts. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening, and talk to you again very soon.